Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, the co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Oh, very good. I understand you have a little announcement for our viewers today.
Yes, as you know, in about just under three weeks' time, we're having a big symposium here in Lake Jackson, the great metropolis. we're joining up with the Mises Institute, our old friends there. And I think it's even more timely than ever, war and peace in the age of Trump. This is what we talk about almost every day. But we've got a lot of people coming down. We'd like to have a lot more coming down to see us. And I think we have, you can sign up for the event, Mises.org/events. I guess someone told me that was a forward slash. But to get more information, sign up, come down and see us, and we'll have a good time.
Well, very good. Hope to see everybody come, at least like a nice crowd. Anyway, today we do want to talk about foreign policy again. We talk about other things. Last week we had a program on the Fed and their announcements. But this one again is going to be on foreign policy. There was a recent article by Robert Perry, who writes frequently on foreign policy and is very similar to our position. But he wrote an article on the Kagans, and the title of the article was "The Kagans Are Back, Wars to Follow." And of course, that's our big concern. You know, is what are we doing? Is Trump going to help us or hurt us? And of course, we were hopeful at the beginning. Our fingers are crossed, and now we're not certain exactly what's going to happen. But we do have pretty good evidence of where the neocons have been, what they have been up to, and where they're going. And even we had a bit of enjoyment to see Hillary beaten, because the Kagans and all the neocons really, really wanted Hillary in, figuring that she'd do their bidding. And she, even though a liberal Democrat, so to speak, she's a liberal with everybody else's money, she was, you know, in the pockets of the neocons, and they were shocked. You know, a lot of people were shocked and surprised about the outcome of the election. But Trump fooled them. But then the neocons were scrambling, and even I thought, the neocons are on the defense. But it looks like not for long. It looks like they're very aggressive. And it might be that they have some money behind them. Money does speak. Trump had a little bit of money, but it was his own at least. But when the special interests donate, it's a different story. So I think it's very interesting. The neoconservatives, that group that started the Project for a New American Century, the Bill Kristol's of the world, you know, all the way back, that's close to 20 years now when they started that, preparing us for the 21st century to be the great American century. Of course, they've given us the Iraq War and Afghanistan and a few other things. But how did the Kagans come back? How did the neocons claw their way back and seem to be winning in many ways? Their policy seems to be coming about. Do they do it with their own money, or do they get support from somebody else?
Well, that's a good question. You know, the piece was from consortiumnews.com, which is Robert Perry's site. And a lot of people always ask, you know, where do we get our info? What do we read? Well, I read that site all the time because it's just a terrific website. But this is a good piece because it's also about how relentless this family is. And it's, of course, we're picking on the Kagans because they've done a lot of damage. But there are many others like them. You know, there's Robert Kagan and his wife, Victoria Nuland. We remember Victoria. She's the one who started the whole mess in Ukraine, going out there handing out cookies, trying to get people to overthrow their government. Well, can you imagine if they had that over here? And so there's one couple, and then there's Fred Kagan and his wife, Kimberly Kagan. Fred Kagan is at the American Enterprise Institute, a big neocon. And Kimberly Kagan has her own institute, the Institute for the Study of War, or as we say, the Institute for the Study of More War.
Right.
But as you pointed out, you know, and this is just an example, that Kimberly Kagan's group, I know it's going to shock you, they get a lot of money from the defense contractors. In fact, we have something from their own website where they gladly put up, these are the people who give them money to promote war. And literally every single one of these huge organizations makes millions and millions of dollars off of selling defense equipment, military equipment, hardware, intelligence, et cetera, to the U.S. government in preparation for war. General Dynamics, CACI, and L3 are the biggest, among the biggest military contractors. So they'll send people like Kimberly Kagan, a couple million dollars a year. That goes pretty far for a small think tank. And then they get a war that benefits them in the billions. It's a good trade-off.
You know, the neocons really came of age, you know, after they laid their plans in the mid-1990s and then with the Bush administration. So it was a Republican organization, so to speak, even though Bush didn't run on that program. He ran on a humble foreign policy. That didn't happen. And all of a sudden, things have changed. But now the ducks are lining up differently, they haven't been able to control Trump. Even though his position as far as war and peace goes is a little bit confusing, but he's not in the pockets of the neocons. No. But all of a sudden, the neocons, they can shift pretty quickly. The alignment has been, and we've mentioned it on our show already, and that is the alignment with liberal Democrats. Yeah. And still, the old neocons in the Republican Party, there's a lot of warmongers in the Republican Party, so they come together. And right now, I'd have to say, for political reasons and for foreign policy reasons, they're the majority. You know, the Democrats, even if they're, well, there's some good Democrats who are pro-peace, they might not, blindly follow. But basically, the Democrats will go politically against Trump, and then there'll be some diehard Republican neocons who bash Russia, who are really outspoken about, stirring up trouble with Russia. So it looks like their policies are prevailing at the present time, and I just don't see the resistance I'd like to see from Trump, from the policies of the neocons. They seem to be marching forward.
Ironically, the neocons originated in the Democratic Party. And ideologically, they are on the left. And they left the Democratic Party when the Democratic Party started turning anti-war against the Vietnam War, and they turned to the Republican Party. And now they're returning to the Democratic Party now that it's pro-war. So they go back and forth.
You know, that point I think is a good one, because I argue it isn't so much the parties as the ideology. And, Keynesianism, I say, has been endorsed by Republicans and Democrats. And this is a policy that when it's an idea, that both good and bad ideas, when they're out there, if they're going to move along, if they're going to be successful, they will invade and control both parties. And this is a good example on how they go back and forth. But it's the ideology that we have to address.
And it is now sort of an unholy alliance that they've made with the Democratic Party, because the Democrats still can't accept the fact that they lost an election, why they lost it, what they did, how they threw it away. They had 90%, 99% probability of winning. So what do? They decide we've got to attack Russia. We've got to say that the Republicans are in bed with Russia, and that's the only reason we lost. It wasn't our terrible platform. And this is where people like Robert Kagan come in, As Perry points out, he had a piece in the Washington Post not long ago saying the Republican parties are enablers of Russian interference in our electoral process.
We were talking a minute ago about the money, where it comes from all those military people who are going to make bundles off it. But they have another close ally. If you added up the dollars worth, they're getting an equal amount of money, I believe, and that's from the media. I mean, where do the Kagans go? They get broadcast. Their policies are out there in front there. They're stirring up the hatred toward Russia and doing all those things. So it is, which TV station could you turn to right now and look for, a little bit balanced approach? Would you look toward that station that's balanced and equal? It's not there. And they get powerful benefits from this.
Ironically, the only TV station you can turn to feature people that are for non-interventionism is RT, a foreign channel. None of our mainstream media in the United States, everyone wants to attack RT, but at least they provide another view. No one in the mainstream media.
But how do people who even speak on RT get treated?
The
immediate, you're a puppet of Putin, that sort of thing. We heard about that little story.
Which is what would happen in the Soviet Union if some Russian dissident came in and appeared on American TV. That's what they would do to him. So it's ironic we've become like the Soviet Union.
Well, the two major things that the neocons are anxious to take care of, and move it along, the political thing. One is invading in a serious manner, none of this piddling around, Syria, and also to have the Cold War going with Russia. They don't want a hot war with Russia, but they want a hot war with Syria, I guess. And when you look at that, you say, well, Trump is not a neocon. Yeah. We sort of agree on that.
Yeah.
So he's going to resist them. But when he wants to go to every spot on the earth to wipe out Al-Qaeda and everybody else, he inadvertently may well be part of the troops that the neocons like. He'll march in and maybe secure an area. And even though they don't like Trump, he might inadvertently actually play into their hands.
Well, I think they use him and they will use him. And this goes with what you've always said, which is the idea that if you're going to be a tough guy, if you're going to be pro-American, if you're going to be macho, you got to be pro-war. And I think Trump is stuck in that category.
And it was of a great benefit. But in Syria, I mean, what kind of a mess is that going to be? Because we're already sending more troops into Syria, nobody's complaining. I mean, the neocons love it. Maybe they'll keep urging them on because every week you hear there's going to be a few more troops. They're not complaining about it. And do we have an individual who would follow the speeches that George Bush gave in the year 2000? Well, maybe we should not be the world's policeman. Maybe we should have a humble foreign policy, which people liked and voted for him on those terms. But no, the emphasis there is very, very powerful. So the ducks are being lined up And one thing that you have to raise questions about where Trump stands on this, the one thing is he may be okay, he may be correct on family services and Planned Parenthood, but it doesn't seem like the place that you're going to really save some money. It's all going into the military because they're about to attack us, just like Saddam. Remember how Saddam was about to attack us with a nuclear weapon?
20 minutes away.
right.
But you're right about, especially Fred and Kimberly Kagan. They had a piece in the Wall Street Journal, and Robert Perry mentioned this not long ago, where they openly said the U.S. needs to invade Syria completely. And here's the cockamamie idea that they have. We need to get more Sunni fighters on the ground in Syria, create a new Sunni army that will first take care of ISIS and then take care of Assad. And, you know, let's look at their track record. You remember this. Fred Kagan was always before the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He was always down there, the great expert. He told us how great the surge was going to be in Iraq. When the surge was going on, he told us how great it was going. And when it was done, he told us how great it was. Well, guess what? It was a total, complete failure. That's why we're going back in there. Their track record is horrible. Yet now they're coming, and their big new idea is to do what the administration has been doing since 2011, which is get this mythical Sunni army that's going to do exactly what they tell them. And it reminds me of what Tulsi Gabbard said when she went there. There's no moderate opposition there.
Yeah, but maybe they'll get troops from Saudi Arabia. You know, they're getting more engaged. They're sending troops outside their country more than usual. And, of course, they have the war going on in Yemen, and they're willing to participate in this. But let's look for a second at a few of the appointments, because I think appointments are important. And we have an appointment to the United Nations. We have an appointment to NATO. We have an appointment to the ambassador to Russia. And they're not exactly non-interventionists. And maybe they're not even called, I don't know, would you call any one of those three a neocon? But they're certainly not on the side of a more balanced approach of us having, you know, work toward neutrality and work toward, not being so aggressive. But they tend to be sympathetic to stirring up trouble with Russia.
And the strange thing is they are overtly opposed to the foreign policy that their boss spelled out as a candidate. So either he was lying then and that they reflect the true Trump, or he's just hired people that are he's supposed to be a great businessman. Can you imagine hiring people who have a completely different strategy in business than you? It doesn't make any sense.
You know, there is this obvious difference and this conflict going on, but I think the average American right now is pretty much unaware of this because other things are going on. But I think when push comes to shove, that issue is going to become apparent because things won't have worked out exactly the way a lot of the supporters thought that they were going to get, from Trump. So it remains to be seen. I do not see how there's going to be a greater chance for peace and tranquility coming soon, but it's all Russia's fault.
Yeah, of course.
Not that they're the angels of the world, but we're a lot closer to their borders than they are to our borders,
And you talk about people, look at someone like Richard Grenell, who supposedly is Trump's nominee to the U.S. ambassador to NATO. Here's Trump as a candidate saying, NATO's overrated, we need to rethink the whole thing. Grenell was the foreign policy spokesman for John Bolton, the neocon's neocon. And he's noted for his anti-Russia views, pro-NATO views. And this is the guy who's going to carry out the policy. Look at someone like Fiona Hill, who was appointed his person on the NSC staff to handle Russia. Virulently anti-Russia. Russia manipulated the elections. And you raised a point earlier that I think is important. Someone like Fiona Hill, she's not a name that's in everyone's mind. But the second-tier candidates, I think, are far more important than the people you see on the top of the marquee, because their ideas are the ones that bubble up to their bosses and become talking points on their bosses' briefing sheets.
And that's the one that, and they're not always approved by the Senate. Some are and some aren't, but they're very important.
That's true. You can sneak through a lot of the lower tier ones.
That's right. But I think that things aren't going well, and I think Trump is sort of in a box in many ways because, take just NATO, Russia too. His position was this, and then the position changes because I think his tone is different with Russia right now, but it's not that he's as militant as his appointing the people he appointed. So I don't see much really good coming of this. But the point of our whole and the whole issue of bringing the Kagans up is they're so influential. I mean, how can they get this? Of course, you point out the money, and I point out the media. So there's a universe out there that likes this foreign policy. But I'm also very convinced that when the American people know the truth and they hear about it, that they'll come down on the right side of this issue if they knew all the issues about Russia. But right now, the antagonism toward Russia is building, and they open up themselves sometimes for it. But compared to what? So it's a mess right now, and unfortunately, I think the neocons have recovered quite well from their setback. Their setback was rather minor. Matter of fact, it was quick. I mean, and they're very influential right now, and they have the coalition in Congress, so I guess the neocon policy is going to be around for a while. So what do you think? How would you summarize this little issue that we have today about the Kagan family?
My three takeaway points would be, first of all, the neocons are relentless. They'd never miss a beat, as you pointed out. If Trump wants to recover his foreign policy presidency, he must explicitly repudiate the neocons. If he ran on a campaign of America first, that means putting Americans first, not the military-industrial complex first.
Well, I hope he's listening. So, and I want to thank our audience for being with us today. And I would like to emphasize that technically there are a lot of things you can go one way or the other, and that's the way politics in the world generally works. I like to think, though, precisely in the ideology of the neocons have been prevailing for a long time now. But I think the goal of this program, and certainly personally, is to promote the ideology of non-interventionism, a policy of peace and prosperity that comes by governments that are designed there to protect liberty and not to police the world and not to believe that we know how to tell people how to live or tell people how they have to spend their money, nor tell the rest of the world how they have to live. That would mean that we would have a non-interventionist foreign policy instead of making us more vulnerable. I believe we'd be a lot safer. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.